All right, the working group will come back to order. I'm sorry for the delay. You know, with some of the things that were in the global agreement, we had to get some sense of how much was spent, what is available, where is it going, that kind of thing this morning. And so we've had people working on that. I believe in the back there's a copy of the leadership agreement for those of you who had not seen it. There is also a sheet that we did very quickly here that shows what the cost is of the various things that were in the agreement and then, you know, what's left on the bottom line, essentially. And so we'll talk here a little bit also this morning about some of the things we probably have to do that aren't in the global agreement, such as special ed. Special ed isn't part of the global agreement, but something we probably need to fund. That's just an example. So, was there anybody on the committee who had any questions or comments about the leadership agreement? Or does everybody, I know that most of us had it pretty well explained to us last night, probably. So, if not, let's move on to the next page. And the next page we may want to talk about a little bit. This is the costs of the deals that were agreed to yesterday or over the last couple of days, whatever. And as you can see, the target is $800 million. For those of you who haven't been to a meeting for a while, that's down from $867. So I'm afraid the delay cost us $67 million in education for which I'm very sorry, but this is what it is, and this is what we work with, and when you look at it, 4 and 4 on the formula is still pretty darn good, and I think more money than education has seen for a long time, and I think more money than there was any expectation there would be, you know, early on. Do you want to run through these? Okay. I will ask Mr. Crow to run through the leadership agreement issues, and then we'll go on from there.
Madam Chair, in order for the committee members to get a sense of what the agreement means in terms of the allocation of funding within that $800 million target you mentioned, Mr. Nowen and I have kind of gone through and made estimates of the various costs of the pieces. So you have a spreadsheet that says leadership agreement, agreed upon items, education finance working group in the upper left-hand corner. These are all fairly round numbers. Some of the things we haven't been able to model precisely yet, but to give you a sense, the numbers are all in cost per biennium, in total revenue, so aid and levy, and there isn't really a specification of aid or levy as you go through, but we know that and the dollars are listed in millions relative to base. So the $800 million target is the target for the biennium relative to base, so $800 million over the base. It's a mix of aid and levy, and you see on the first line that it's $566 million of aid, $95 million of shift, and $139 million of levy. So then the individual items that are listed in the agreement, starting at the top of the spreadsheet, there's a 4% increase to the formula. You'll notice there's two numbers for that part, and that's because the leadership agreement is silent on the issue of linking or delinking of the various formulas that are associated with the 4% and 4% or the key off of the basic formula. So without any judgment about what this committee will do, the cost of those two or of that 4% and 4% increase are itemized, both linked and delinked. And you can see that delinked is about
here?
Mr. Crow, when you the House provision had them delinked but had inflationary increase, is that included in the delinked, or is that?
Madam Chair and members, on this sheet, the delinked just means what does the basic formula go up? What does it cost to raise the basic formula 4% and 4% with nothing else going up?
So there's no inflationary increase to that linkage then,
right?
Or delinking.
Right.
That would be the next number, Mr. Crow, right?
Right. The 525 then would be everything linked at 4% and 4%. If the bill were to be if this committee adopted a bill similar to what the House did, the number would be somewhere halfway in between. Even though there was delinking in the House bill, some of the formulas were increased at the same percentage as the basic formula.
Okay.
Then the next item agreed upon in the leadership agreement is QComp. You'll remember that we've talked about QComp as costing $93 million. That includes rolling in the existing funding. So this is the net amount over the base that it would cost to do QComp. Then the referendum cap, that's $86 million. Then the referendum cap and the equalization increase would be about $40 million, with the cap at 26% of the formula and the equalized amount going up $100 in 2007 and 2008. So it would be $607 and $708. Then there is a provision to adopt the low referendum equity and the metro equity pieces that cost about $15 million. Then there's a provision for additional equity funding of $32 million that would be allocated equally across all districts below the 95th percentile, with those above the 95th percentile receiving half on a per-pupil basis of what those districts below the 95th percentile receive. Then there's a provision to include the governor's initiatives on high school credits, the Get Ready, Get Credit program. This is a total of about $12 million. And then there's a provision for $10 million of aid for early childhood programs. So the subtotal of those agreed upon items, if you delink, is $652 million. If it's linked, is $720 million. So the net target for allocation by the working group, if you have delinking, it's $148 million. If everything is linked, it's $80
million. Are there any questions about this piece? This is just a little more explanation. Senator Stone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair. The it's interesting how you have laid this out. One thing that kind of jumps out is the, you know, your linking and delinking and what is silent or not in the agreement. The agreement is silent on the shift. And I believe that was at the request of the governor. And I think it was also silent on a general education levy, which was one of the things that the Senate felt very strongly on. And as we move to a funding education more and more with property taxes, the Senate's approach was that we would have we should have an equalized opportunity for students across the state to participate in that revenue. So as you lay out the linked and delinked, there are other things that could be laid out on the sheet, such as the general education levy. The Senate had a consolidated levy approach with a 0% increase, but we did not... that was a discussion in terms of the agreement. So I just wanted to put that on the record.
Senator, just a clarification. There was never a global agreement on the consolidated statewide levy, though, was there?
Madam Chair, no. Neither was there a global agreement on delinking.
Right, and the only reason that is listed there is because the original House bill did not link, and the Senate bill did. So, you know, there's two ways on this. That's all. Mm-hmm. It just indicates what was in the two different bills.
Madam Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question just because I wasn't in the room and I didn't. I'm trying to understand Senator Stump's point. I understand it, but I'm wondering why was the negotiations based on the House bill rather than current law? How did that come about? What was the rationale for that?
It wasn't mentioned in negotiations. Representative Greiling, it wasn't mentioned in negotiations as far as the global stuff. And it's listed here because there is a difference. As you know, when the House bill passed the floor, it wasn't linked. And we can decide to link. It's just listed here because there were differences in the two bills.
So, Madam Chair.
So we linked some of the things. This indicates in our bill we did not link compensatory, we did not link transportation. The other items were linked. Transportation we increased to 8% increase instead of the 3% that was in our bill. And compensatory we did not link.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Grahling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand the House bill. What my question is, why were the governor and the legislative leaders taking the House bill for their baseline premise, and therefore, because they were silent on it, now we're left with this discussion? Why were they not taking current law as their basis, is what I'm asking.
Representative Grahling. Yes, Mr. Strom, you may jump in.
Madam Chair, as someone who's been out of town and not a part of the discussions, let me try and clarify what the sheet in front of you is for. The only purpose for the sheet is not to establish where to start from. That's up to the respective groups to decide where to start from. It's just to let people know what's on the bottom line after the agreement. And as Senator Stumpf has said, Senator Stumpf has made the argument why the linked numbers should be chosen as the starting place, in which case, if you go to the bottom of the sheet, you'll see that shows that there's $80 million for this group to continue to spend. If, on the other hand, the argument is that it's delinked, then it's the 148. The only purpose of this sheet is to give people context so they can have some understanding about what to do next.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Strom, so in other words, the governor and the leaders were taking current law. It's the House proposal here that's assuming,
Madam Chair, Representative Grahling, what the leadership agreement is exactly what's on this paper. That's what's got to happen. Anything else is up to this group to decide. But for purposes of helping people work through numbers today, the goal was to put out a piece of paper that says, if you accept one of the two likely scenarios, Senate starting place or House starting place, here's what falls to the bottom line to spend of the remaining items that have not yet been adopted.
Thank you.
All right, are there any other questions about what's on this list? All right. But this is our starting point. And you can see how much money is left on the bottom line to discuss. Now, there's a couple things that we probably need to do as a committee. And I'm just going to throw them out because we'll come back with our offers after a little time goes by here. But special ed requires for maintenance of effort about $24 million. We've agreed to do value added pretty much. And there's a science test that needs to be developed. The total of that is, I believe, 4.2. Isn't there a science test?
Yes.
I'm not saying that this is in the global. I'm saying these are some things that are kind of hanging out there that are important.
Madam Chair, I think Senator Stumpf and I were engaging in some nonverbal communication regarding the value-added piece.
Yeah.
I don't think there's agreement on the value-added piece unless the House is agreeing to the Senate's position on computer adaptive testing.
Senator, I wasn't suggesting that. I mean, it's value added is in both bills. And it's something that over time we've agreed we wish to do. So, yes, there's no agreement on whose language at this point. I wasn't suggesting it. I'm sorry if I misinterpreted that. I just said that's one of the things we probably need to deal with. And then the Carpenter buses cost $3 million, whether it's levy or aid or loan, whatever. It still costs $3 million. So those are items that we're kind of stuck with. I don't know if there's any others you feel we have to deal with or not. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, when you said the $4.2 million, was that the cost of the science test?
Yes.
Science test and doing value added, which I think is 1.9, and the rest of that is the science test.
Oh, so 4.2 is both of those.
The total, right.
Regardless of whether it's the computer, regardless of which.
I think the science test will be a computerized test. I think that's what they're developing, isn't it?
Yes.
So that one is, that's a given. The science test will be computer test. All right, are there any other questions? That's just something I'm throwing out that we don't want to lose as we go through here, the importance of those three items, unless we want kids riding around in the Carpenter buses. I don't think we do. Okay. So this is where, you know, as we break, we can go forward and come back with our language, but I thought it was important that everybody have a baseline so that we knew where we were starting and what we had to work with. Then we have a little unfinished business which I sort of put down as old business, and that was something that we promised we'd come back to, and that was Senator Scheid, your amendment.
Madam Chair, do you mean on site-based?
Yes. But maybe before we do that, Senator Kelly, since QComp was part of the overall agreement here, and there's a lot of language that goes with QComp, and I would say Senator Kelly and myself and the commissioner spent a lot of nights together lately and spent a lot of time on this language. And so there is an amendment here on the QComp, and Senator Kelly will... You okay with explaining that, Senator Kelly? I think... So if you would pull out... This is LL87. Oh, is this prepared?
Thank you.
We'll wait just a minute to walk through until all of you have had a chance to pick up copies. I hope we have enough. If not, we'll try and get some more made. Wait a minute, Lisa, see if we need them. You can send Jan up if we do. But it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, come back on Wednesday.
Can we come back Wednesday? If we could get time, we could do it.
Oh, here's the indication. We just have to plan the family decision.
So that's the way it goes. However, the price of being here
is coming in.
When you're going into July, and all right, Senator Kelly, I think you could proceed and maybe just walk us through the highlights of this QComp agreement, and so people, I think, will better understand what QComp is and what it does.
And Madam Chair and members, the LL87 amendment, which I had not seen in its final form before now, so there may be some things we'll discover along the way, but it represents a blending of the House position and the Senate position with respect to alternative teacher compensation, and I suppose folks will call it whatever they want to call it, but the name used consistently through the document is alternative teacher professional pay system. And the first step is language from the Senate bill providing that a district or site seeking to do an alternative a professional pay system has to have an educational improvement plan at the district and at the site level, and the educational improvement plan has to be developed with substantial participation by the exclusive representative of the teachers in developing the plan. Then if you go down to page, so that's the page one and the first half of page two, then page 2, lines 28 through the bottom, and the first line on page 3 establishes the professional pay system and is a blending of House and Senate concepts. For example, lines 35 and 36 talk about encouraging highly qualified teachers to undertake challenging assignments. We don't affect the compensation with respect to that. So that's still an aspirational goal that we may need to deal with in the future. Then page 3 picks up the concept that the Senate had, which is that the testimony we heard was that schools needed a substantial amount of time to properly plan for the implementation of a professional pay system. We didn't want to have a rush to apply by districts that had, in an effort to get the funding, had not fully thought through or developed their plan. So this language requires that every school district or site seeking to participate has to have a transitional planning year. And I'll try to outline the process that we envisioned, which is that the school district, and we'll assume a school district, the process would be similar for a site, but the school district and the teachers start talking about the possibility of moving towards a alternative professional pay system, go through those exploratory discussions for however long they want, and at the point they say, okay, we're ready to go forward with planning, then the district and the school exclusive representative sign off on a letter of intent, which is sent to the commissioner indicating that they intend to begin this planning year process. Once that letter of intent is sent in, the district and the exclusive representative also have to commit to using up to 2% of basic revenue for the planning process, which can include developing the educational improvement plan, drafting the collective bargaining agreement or other agreement that would reflect the provisions of the plan, starting to train or determine the criteria for evaluating teachers, and hopefully starting to train personnel in implementing the system. So when the plan is fully developed, they then submit, and this brings us, before I leave page 3, note on there are parallel processes for traditional school districts or traditional school district sites. And for charter schools, the charter school provisions are on lines 20 through 32. Then lines 33 through 36, we do know that there are some schools or school districts that are very ready to go because they've been talking about it over a period of time. St. Francis is one example that I think members are aware of. And then there are also the pilot sites that have been working on this for a period of time. So they don't. There's the potential for the commissioner to waive the planning year for a limited number of school sites or school districts. Then, if you go to page 4, it refers to the actual implementation of the system after the planning year, and in order to participate, as I said earlier, the district or site or charter school has to have an educational improvement plan and an alternative teacher professional pay system agreement. Now, that could be the overall collective bargaining agreement for the district, but it need not be the overall collective bargaining agreement. It could be a memorandum of understanding with respect to a site or a supplemental agreement with respect that would implement this alternative pay system. The agreement has to do the things that are listed starting on line 10 on page 4. Describe how teachers can achieve a career advancement. Describe how teachers will be permitted to retain primary roles in instruction, but also facilitate site-based professional development that helps other teachers develop their skills. Then number 3, the new language starts on line 25. The House had reform the steps and lanes salary schedule. The Senate had some language relating to not based on not based solely on years of service or educational qualifications. The concepts were similar. So in the effort to achieve a compromise, we used the term reform rather than eliminate the steps and lanes salary schedule. Then one of the key provisions in the Senate proposal was that implementation of the system would not reduce any teacher's compensation from the level before the system was implemented. And then on lines 28 and 29, 60% of an increase in compensation for teachers would use some concept of performance incorporating school-wide student achievement gains, not benchmarks, but school-wide student achievement gains, using either the MCAs or locally selected assessments. So, for example, Waseca is using the a computer adaptive test for its school performance system, and rather than the MCAs, and other districts use the other forms of tests. Then on line 33, measures of student achievement, and one of the key issues there is that we don't want this system to be just based on standardized tests. There are multiple ways of assessing student achievement, including potentially portfolios or how a student performs in exercises like speech or art or music, and the system ought to incorporate non-standardized measures of student achievement, among other possible. This leaves a lot of latitude to the local bargaining unit and the district or site to develop the measures. And then on lines 34 through 36 and over onto the next page, the use of objective evaluations of the teacher based on observation. And they have to be objective evaluations using multiple criteria conducted by trained local teams. And there, again, there's a lot of latitude about what criteria to use and the evaluation approach that the local teams will use. Then
Senator, we have a question for you.
Before we go on, Senator Kelly, I just have to have a general question asked before we really look at this thing critically. Is it amenable? Is this bill as is now, or do we have a discussion in it? Can we amend it? Can we make changes?
Madam Chair, Representative Heidgerken, the agreement that I had with the chair and with Commissioner Segrin was that this was the language pretty much in concept. There were some things that still needed to potentially be worked out, but the parameters are not wide. The parameters for amendment are relatively limited under our agreement or understanding.
Well, under the global agreement, Representative. Are there other questions at this point? Representative, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Kelly, when you have, I understand what you said about the Senate position, and then this is the House language on page 4, line 25, reform the steps and lanes salary schedule, but what would be the difference?
House was eliminate.
Well, the House had eliminate,
Senator
which, Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, the House had eliminate, and there was some confusion about what was meant by that, because I was at a panel with the commissioner where she said we didn't really mean you had to blow them up or get rid of them completely, but that they wouldn't be the dominant way that you would do compensation increases. And there are among the other districts or sites that have used alternative teacher compensation, in some cases they've compressed the steps and lanes schedule, or they've kept the steps and lanes and have used the alternative compensation system to supplement or be the add-on. And there, so we're not the effort here was to not be prescriptive, to recognize that some form of alternative of steps and lanes might still be involved. It's up to the local district. I think that's the key message throughout here, is that this process doesn't get started unless the district and the collective bargaining representative agree at the outset to start the process. Then they have to agree during the planning process, and they have to agree on the components of the whole thing. So nothing happens unless the collective bargaining unit and the district agree on what's going to happen.
Representative, I think there's an understanding that, you know, generally most companies, most employers pay somewhat on experience and somewhat on whether or not you have a bachelor's, a master's, or whatever. But it isn't an automatic everything. So this recognizes all the other pieces. I think it's really a pretty good compromise language, actually. You know, whether you call it reform or whatever you want to call it.
And so, Madam Chair, on page 5, the charter school provision, the Senate had been silent with respect to the charter school process. So subdivision 2A has more of the language from the House with respect to how a charter school would move towards obtaining access to the funding. And so let me just be clear about the funding under this concept. During the transitional evaluation or transitional planning year, there is no new money. There is flexibility with respect to the use of the staff development money, and the district makes a commitment to spend up to 2% of basic revenue for the planning purpose. Then, at the point of full implementation, we adopted the House's and Governor's position that the incentive for participating in the alternative pay system was $260 per pupil. And then I skipped over.
Representative Heidbergen.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Kelly, to that point. When you mentioned the flexibility of the staff development, and you're referring to just the QCOMP aspect, what happens to the school districts that may not be ready for the staff development piece right now? Especially with a lot of the small rural schools where they may have a superintendent acting even as a principal, and they don't have a whole lot of time, obviously, to get ready for something like this. Right now that we had changed last year, giving these small rural schools, and Senator Stump, you're quite familiar with this, the flexibility on staff development monies. Does that stay in place, or You address the staff development in regards to those that are going for QCOMP. I understand that. What happens to the school districts right now that are using the staff development monies? They may be using them in other ways. You get over the bad scenario they've gone through the last couple of years. Where are we at with the schools not involved?
Madam Chair, Representative Heidgerken, if you turn to page 7, lines 12 to 18. This language provides that a school district that qualifies to participate in the alternative pay system can use up to 2% of basic revenue that would otherwise be reserved for purposes of complying with the planning and staff development activities. That means that the districts that are not participating have to continue to reserve their staff development money.
Senator, no. That was not the agreement. The agreement was that QCOMP districts would reserve their staff development money, but not that other districts had to do that.
Well, Madam Chair, if you look at lines 12 through 18, this is the only way that a district that's in this document, that a district can avoid reserving the staff development money that is current law.
No, in our bill, in my understanding, Senator Kelly, and was that they did not have to reserve it unless they were going into QCOMP. That was our discussion. If they were going into QCOMP, they used QCOMP money. But otherwise, they were not forced to put their 2% into QCon, or 2% into staff development.
Madam
they
Chair,
have flexibility there.
Madam Chair, the language reflects my understanding of what we did.
Okay, it does not reflect my understanding. So,
so Madam Chair, we're back to that question that we were talking about in the middle of the night about this agreement.
In a QComp district would be using it, but the other districts who aren't going into QComp did not have to do that. That was pretty clear, I thought. So,
Madam Chair, I'll just note that this is the governor's and the Senate's position.
Baloney. This is one of those small amendments we may need, Senator, because this probably this is a problem. And
Madam Chair, I'm not the one blowing up the agreement, Madam Chair.
Yep, I got it. But this was not the way we understood it.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
At the risk of getting into this fight, is there anybody else who witnessed this discussion that could add any other light on it?
The commissioner is
commissioner?
Not here, right? Yes. As I understood it, Senator Kelly, this was my compromise on your staff development, was that the QComp districts would have to do it, but the others would not. Commissioner, I don't know what you may have understood from this, but I hope you'll share that with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Lines 12 through 18 was compromised language that we agreed to. And if you look at line 15, it says Subdivision 1A may use up to 2% of basic revenue. We talked about whether we wanted to mandate using an additional 2% for staff development if you go into QCOM. Mm-hmm. And we said, well, they may have other purposes that they're reserving their staff development for, but if they want to use it for QCOM, they can. And so that's our understanding, that they can use it if they want to. It's not a mandate that they have to use it for those districts that are going into QCOM. In regard to the other issue about whether you want other districts that are not, have decided not to go into QCOM, I think that language in the Senate's bill and the House bill is in a separate part of your document, and I don't think that has been resolved.
So you don't see that as a part of this?
I don't see that as a part of it. I think you still have a discussion about how you want to handle other districts. But for me, the understanding for this was that we talked about for districts that are going into QCOM. First of all, for the transition, we definitely wanted to say if you're interested in it, we want you to commit to using up to 2% of your staff development for planning. And then that also is going to help us as a department to kind of know maybe who's interested. And then we also wanted to say, if you want to use more money, you can. Mm-hmm. But that's my understanding of it.
And I knew this was applied only to QCOM schools, but it was my understanding that other districts would not, if they weren't going into QCOM, did not have to set aside. That it would be the same as this past year, where they had flexibility with their that so-called set aside 2%.
Madam Chair, I think that issue is unresolved for you and the Senate.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Segrin, we went over this particular paragraph several times, mm-hmm. and the interpretation that the chair is putting on it would make the language would otherwise be reserved under Section 122A.61 meaningless if the House position that 122A.61 is repealed. We're part of the deal. So the language clearly reflected that 122A.61 would stay in effect and that the temporary moratorium would be over.
And Madam Chair and Senator Kelly, I didn't necessarily interpret it one way or the other. I imagine that, you know, if you change Section 122A, if you modify that in any way, I didn't I thought that that was an unresolved issue between the Senate and the House. I did clearly understand that we wanted to give districts the option to use the staff development for it, for QComp if they wanted to. And I know we did also talk about the, if they had some reserve already that was unused, that they could also use that and count it towards it. So.
Okay, let's go on. Thank you, Commissioner.
You're welcome.
Let's go on.
Madam Chair, the the application process starts at the bottom of page 5 and goes over onto page 6. And it provides for the timing. The key provisions here are that the school district that has completed the planning transitional year would submit the proposed agreement along with the education plan and any other documents that it's supposed to submit to the commissioner, that the agreement would not yet be executed or adopted. It would be in its final but pre-adoption stage. The commissioner would look at it, approve it or disapprove it, and if it was approved, then the document would have to be executed and adopted before the any of the money was paid out to the district. And then in lines 21 through 30, if the commissioner disapproves an application, and the commissioner has to give the applicant notice of the reasons in detail, and that would enable the applicant to revise and resubmit its application. If it does that within 30 days and then is subsequently approved, the application is counted as for the purposes of the first come first served awarding of grants. The applicant is in the queue from the date they first submitted it rather than the date of the resubmittal.
What's he got going here? Go ahead.
Then there's an ongoing oversight process that appears on page 7, lines 5 to 11, under which there are annual reports to the commissioner, and if the commissioner determines that a school district site or charter school is not continuing to comply with the requirements, the commissioner could withhold funding, but before doing that, there has to be a notice and an opportunity for the participant to move into compliance. We've already talked about subdivision 3A. The section 42, lines 21 through 29, in order to give districts that are in the midpoint of a collective bargaining agreement time to or the opportunity to participate, this authorizes the reopening of a collective bargaining agreement for the purpose of entering into a professional pay system agreement, but it limits the subjects that can be discussed during that reopened contract discussion to issues related to the alternative teacher professional pay system. Then on page 8, this further describes the application, and it has to, and also provides that the pay system agreement has to implement the pay system and has to be negotiated and adopted consistent with PELRA. But there's a change in with respect to PELRA here in that the contract could be for a term of 2 or 4 years if it's for a if it incorporates an alternative professional pay system agreement. Then the language at the bottom of page 8 provides that October 1st of the previous fiscal year is the date for counting the number of pupils. But then in response to some concerns raised by the parties reflecting the potential for consolidated districts or combined sites. There's a language at the top of page 9 using December 1st if there's a newly combined or consolidated district. This was a concern that was expressed. This was language that the folks who expressed the concern haven't seen yet. And so this would be the kind of area where we're looking for further refinement to make sure we address the concern that people had. Section 44 relates to the timing of receipt of the aid or revenue. Page 10, lines 17 through 32, I think there was concern that since charter schools would be able to participate, that some of them would be able to get ahead of the other traditional schools in terms of access to the money. So this allocates $5 million in the first fiscal year and $3.3 million in the second fiscal year that would be allotted to the charter schools. Then we'll talk about another allotment later on. Then pages 11, 12, and 13 are essentially the Senate position on revision of the staff development language. And the Senate position incorporated department recommendations as in a modified form. Then page 13 protects the current pilot sites with respect to their ability to receive alternative compensation aid under the current system. They can continue to do that for 2 years. But before then, they have the opportunity to shift over to the new system if they comply with the new requirements. So that addresses the pilot sites. And then Section 62, the House had some language regarding sorting the applications by geographic region and left unspecified how to resolve a conflict, but I mean, what being in a particular region's pile meant in terms of the mandate that the grants had to be or the revenue had to be authorized on a first come first served basis. So this is language that I think Ms. Larson developed in order to respond to a concept that we discussed. This would be, I think, another area where we'd want to refine the language in response to any concerns that people have about the clarity of what we were trying to accomplish. But I think the thought was to allocate the QCOMP funds available according to a metropolitan group and a non-metropolitan group based on the number of pupils in the two groups, and allocate the money on a first-come, first-served basis within those two groups. If not enough applicants came forward in one group or the other, after a period of time, the commissioner would be authorized to reallocate the money on an across-the-board basis.
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Kelly, when you were talking about charter schools and the allocation, I believe you said, and I think Senator Scheid heard it also, that you said in the first year it would allocate $5 million, and the second year it went down to $3 million. But then doesn't correspond with the numbers here, so I thought you may want to clarify that in case this is on tape.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, thank you. I put an extra set of digits in there. It's $500,000 in the first fiscal year and then $3.3 million in the second fiscal year. Madam Chair, that's it for the language.
Are there any other questions about the language? Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Kelly, having not had the opportunity to participate in this discussion, I noticed there is a tremendous policy change on page 8, line 16. where we now allow school districts to enter into four-year contracts. Given the fact that the state funds schools on a biennial basis, I'm sure there was probably behind closed doors a lot of discussion about the fiduciary responsibility of legislators and how this would all play out. Can you share some of that discussion with us?
Madam Chair, Representative Diskins, this was a Senate concession to a House position, so I didn't argue much with the House about it at all, and so there was relatively little discussion.
Thank you.
Actually, this was something that the department brought forward, I think, which would help to ease the transition into QComp. Did you want to make a comment on that, Representative? Pardon me. Commissioner Seguin or not? Okay. Are there any other questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Secor. This is not a question about the language, but I have a question about what happens to those school districts such as St. Francis who are ready to begin now to participate and have already done their planning. How do they fit into this scheme?
Do you wish to answer that, Senator?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, if you turn to page 3, lines 33 to 36, the commissioner is authorized to waive the planning year if the commissioner determines that a district, site, or charter school is ready to fully implement the alternative pay system. So a district like St. Francis could seek a waiver from the commissioner and be authorized to participate in the first fiscal year.
And Madam Chair, Ms. Larson tells me, thank you, Madam Chair, Ms. Larson tells me that we're going to have to create an effective date. So that was what was going in. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions? Representative Greiling, one more question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Kelly or Representative Secora, I think you said at the beginning, Senator Kelly, that you didn't see this until as you were going through it. Is that correct? And so I'm wondering if there's been any sharing of it with any interested parties and if they had a chance to tell us if there were any red flags.
Senator Kelly.
Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, yesterday during the course of the conversations, an earlier version of the document was available and was shared with the folks who have been involved in implementing this, and they came back with suggestions, I would say most of which are incorporated in this document. And so I think there was an opportunity to respond. Now, of course, they didn't, until today, they didn't have a chance to see whether I caught their drift in communicating it to Representative Secor or the commissioner or Ms. Larson for purposes of the drafting. And so we may see some reactions saying Senator Kelly didn't have a clue what we were talking about. But,
just like I messed up and didn't have a clue on that other issue. But in general, we went back and forth a number of times. We had several different revisions of this. Each time we addressed concerns, and sometimes we just, you know, had clumsy language and we tried to clean up the language. Let's see, we spent from 9 o'clock Thursday night till 4 in the morning on this, and then we spent a lot of time yesterday on this as well. And we didn't really finalize this till what, 9 o'clock? Last night.
That's about right, Madam Chair.
A lot of time was spent on this language trying to make sure that it worked. And I still messed up. But that's another item of legislation, actually. So we can still address the whole thing on the staff development. All right. So what happened to Senator Scheid?
Oh, break.
When she comes back, I thought we'd take up, because it's old business, her amendment. And then there was somebody brought to me, and nobody's name is on this, this whole online immunization thing, have you heard anything about that? Well, you can't get immunized online. Sorry. I do have a way of putting things well, don't I? apparently, there are some people who are taking online education from other states. They remember, we have a law that you have to have your immunizations before you can attend school. Well, this is considered attending a public school. So we have a proposal to do something about that. It's something for you to think about, and this was passed out, right? It's being passed out. You may look at it until we come back or something. I guess my next question, Senator Kelly, are you ready to remove adoption of the QCOMP language?
Madam Chair, not until we get resolution of that other.
That's
other
that's
matter.
Not part of this bill. We will have to accept what's in the bill.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
It was a key part of my understanding of the agreement, and if it's still an issue, then I'm not ready to move it, and I don't think the Senate is. I mean, it was the language that was I first submitted to the commissioner and to you. You took it out, then we put it back in. So it was bargained over as a part of the conversation. And if the House is willing to acknowledge the position in this document, then I'd be happy to move the document.
Senator.
Madam Chair, I think we do need to have just a little more opportunity to, one of the provisions I think that I would like to get some input in, especially in particular from the regarding the rural schools, and I know Representative Heidekirchen is gone, but is on the time frame that they would be able to participate, and maybe it's not an issue, but I know late last night when we signed off, I think the language was still very loose. And I talked to Commissioner Segrin, and she was mentioning something about, an opportunity, some time frame. So I guess I would just like to, have an opportunity to visit with some of the education associations on how rural schools might have a fair participation in it.
Representative, I'm so sorry. It's been a long 2 days with no sleep.
Madam Chair, it's called sleep deprivation.
Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair, I was always proud to be called a representative, and I always will be.
Good.
Madam Chair, Senator Stump, last night when we were talking, and it was about 1 o'clock in the morning, I had said I misspoke when I was talking to you about the process. The department will have, once this effective date goes into place for QCOMP, we have 30 days to develop an application, and then the application is put out there. But then after that, there is no timeline or mandated timeline whereby anybody has to get an application back in. So I think that was a concern that, there'd be such a big turnaround time, and I was misspoken on that. So it's, everybody has the same amount of time. You can take as long or as short a period of time as you want to get your application in.
And they could apply a year from now, isn't
that
right?
Yes, they could.
Or 2 years from now. Nobody's required to do this immediately. It's not a mandate in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, Madam Chair, I think the concern I had was the trigger point at which the money would go from one area to another. In other words, let's say, and I know so very little about this that it's maybe talking more from ignorance than anything, but you had mentioned something about if not enough schools would put an application in, and I certainly can understand that. But my guess is that many of the smaller rural schools probably aren't as aware of the performance kinds of procedures and things as many of the larger schools. And so the concern I had is that if you had 30 days to get the information out, I just think that it might be a little unfair for those smaller schools to respond in a period of time that's too short. And then if they don't respond, then the money shifts over to the other region. So that's what I wanted to just have a chance to visit with some of the education associations, just to see what they what their feeling might be. And you mentioned 30 days last night.
Yeah, and Senator Stumpf, I misspoke on that.
Okay.
We have, the department has 30 days in which we have to get our act together to get the application developed. And then that, after the date of enactment, and then that application goes out, that then people can, you know, take whatever amount of time they need to look at the application and fill it out. But your point is then after that, let's say let's say July 15th was the enactment date, and then we have till August 15th to get the application out. From that point on, how long do we keep that money on the table? Should it be 3 months? Should it be 6 months?
Right.
Should it be 9 months? And I am certainly open to listening to that discussion and figuring out. We had put, I think what we've got on here is until January 15th, 2006. That would be basically looking at an October 1 and then going another 3. So if we got an application out on August 15th, you'd have almost 6 months, or about 5.5 months, in which to look things over. But if the education organizations feel like that is not sufficient enough time for the rural areas to respond, you know, I'm certainly open to listening to the discussion and working with you on an appropriate date.
Okay.
And then I think, and the other thing that I have a question in my mind too is that, and maybe this is to Ms. Larson or to Mr. Strom or to even Mr. Melcher, is that once we, this is, says until January 15, 2006, but this is an ongoing program. So I'm a little bit questioning about the 2006 year versus if it should just be a January until whatever that date is of whatever year it is. So that's just the other issue that we have to just resolve technically too.
Senator,
do you have any further questions on this?
Madam Chair, no. I just wanted to visit with some of the associations that represent schools.
So. Okay. Senator Kelly.
Madam Chair, I'll move the L-82 amendment with respect to the immunizations for persons who participate in online learning.
But is there any discussion of this?
Madam Chair, I have a question for you. This is drafted only to non-public schools. Wouldn't we want it to apply to any Minnesota school online learning course or program?
Yeah, I would think so.
Madam Chair.
Representative Biskins.
Madam Chair, this piece is a very specific piece. It was forwarded to me from Representative Nora Slawick. I believe it must have been a constituent of hers who was starting a private school and ran through this glitch in the law. Senator Kelly, I think whether or not we should have it apply to all online schools would probably be a broader discussion because of the potential, and I don't know, I have to think of Senator Kelly, what are the rules that we have in place for public online schools and their requirements to meet with teachers face-to-face at any given time or set time. Senator Kelly, do you recall what those requirements are?
Madam Chair.
Senator.
Representative Biskins, not offhand, but you know, in terms of our public health requirements, I don't think we distinguish between non-public schools and public schools. I mean, the immunization is a public health issue.
Right.
So I missed it, but when someone first brought, and maybe it was you who first brought this to my attention, I understood the problem that we were talking about non-Minnesota residents who, the argument was, we didn't need to pay attention to the immunization because they weren't going to come into contact with any Minnesotans and right. or you know Minnesota school children. Okay. They could go infect Ohioans as much as they wanted, but but we weren't going to worry about it as a Minnesota public health issue. And it would seem to me that if that was the concept behind it, it would apply to public or non-public schools equally.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Senator Kelly, you're absolutely right. And I don't think there'd be any harm in turning it to any school. My question is, though, whether or not it's even relevant for a public online school, because I had thought for public online schools, schools that receive public funding, that there were requirements to meet at some intervals of time, and so then the legislation and the provisions thereof. I see. I didn't think it was possible for a non-resident Minnesota student to enroll in a Minnesota public online school and never step foot in the state of Minnesota. Now, maybe I'm wrong on that, and if so, then the change would be most appropriate.
Senator Kelly.
Madam Chair, I'm going to withdraw my motion, and then I'm going to answer. I think, Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, it seems to me that a Minnesota school could offer an online course if the tuition is fully paid, a Minnesota public school could offer an online course to a non-resident, and if the tuition was fully paid by the student and wasn't using, you know, by definition, it wouldn't be using Minnesota aid. I think our aid is tied to those conditions. So what we're dealing with, sort of by definition, are either public or non-public schools delivering a course for tuition purposes, not for aid purposes, and that's why I'm not sure I'd get the distinction.
And Madam Chair?
Representative Biskins.
Madam Chair, I agree wholeheartedly with Senator Kelly, and if he wants to renew his motion and make the amendment to take out the non-public, I think that'd be just fine. Either way, as long as they don't ever step foot in the state of Minnesota, it doesn't matter whether it's public or non-public. So that other caveat there, I would tend to agree with you, Senator.
Senator, should we do a little more research on this, or are you comfortable?
Madam Chair, my sense, I mean, maybe just a tad more thinking about it, and maybe a contact with public health folks, because I'm not sure that the key issue is a Minnesota resident. It would be for example, you could have a Wisconsin resident who's close enough to actually come and participate in, you know, in a face-to-face portion of a program, in which case you might want to say that immunizations ought to be up to date. So I'm not sure we have the distinction quite right yet.
Yeah, Senator, I think on our Dakota border, there are students who actually, I know there are Minnesota students going to South Dakota schools and vice versa. Mm-hmm. What do we do there?
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
So, Madam Chair, I think what you would want to put as a qualifier, if that out-of-state resident is in fact paying tuition for a program that will not require the on-site visit, then this would.
Right.
Then it would, proximity would make no difference.
For those types of pupils who will not be attending classes in Minnesota, requiring an immunization statement is, yeah.
Ms. Larson, do you want to make just a small change in the language for this? Okay. All right. In the meantime, we'll lay that aside while she works on the language. We have one other thing. You just received a copy of all the baseline spending that's in our bill. We can just approve the baseline spending right now. Yeah. Mr. Crow will explain it.
Madam Chair and members, as you mentioned, this is all of the same appropriations in the House and the Senate bill that are at base. The exception is line 54, which is the fourth line on the page that says abatement aid. Both bills have a technical adjustment to abatement aid that actually make a reduction from base of $896,000 that could be adopted as part of the SAMES without any real issues in terms of the bill. And so then the balance are simply base appropriations where there weren't any changes, and they are the same in the House and Senate bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator.
Madam Chair, I'd move that we adopt these SAMES, the sheet that we have before us.
All right, is there any discussion? Representative Hyde-Gerken.
Madam Chair, thank you. Greg, Mr. Crow, I missed your conversation here. The schools that we see there that are getting the levies, they're the same in both the House and Senate, right? All of them?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Representative Hyde-Gerken, that's mm-hmm. correct.
And these are things that were in place for a while, and they're gradually phasing out. For one reason or another, they were given some additional aid. You're talking about Albert Lee, Mesabi East, et cetera? Okay. So is there any further discussion of this? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Sikora. Mr. Crow, if I were to offer an amendment to add MinLink under the library items, what is the cost? Is it $500,000? Could you help me out there?
And
maybe it's not appropriate at this time, but
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, the House bill added $500,000 over the base budget for MinLink. As I said, these are all same.
Yes.
The committee could adopt
something. We
could move to add anything to this list, but this is the list of the ones that are the same in both bills.
So. My suggestion would be that we just adopt the identical.
That's fine.
And then later we talk about the new spending. Okay. Any further discussion of this? All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Yes.
Our language prevails, and we have accepted the baseline sayings. All right. Then we have Senator Scheid.
Yes.
Can we do your amendment since... That's been delayed for about
Madam Chair,
two weeks.
Thank you. Yes, I was going to ask you if you would.
Yes,
so,
we have. And
I thought
see.
We might not
this
get back
to
the A9.
It's A9, but if we find the page.
I'm sorry, it's Article 2, R42, 43 in there. I think we actually start in the Senate... in the House on R41. And we did adopt some language
yes.
on June 29th. Mm-hmm. And I guess I apologize because I probably should have just done this at the time.
Well, at the time, Senator, I was confused because you had a spending item, and this is just a language piece.
Language. Then there were blanks for dollar amounts for grants, and then there was this language in front of you.
Right.
Obviously, we don't have any dollar amounts in here.
Right.
We don't have blanks. We just have the
language.
The language we adopted on the 29th, and now this. And this would be, I guess, added to current statutory language. In 123B.04. And this says that, you know, obviously it depends on there being grants available, but it says that at the very least, that if you look on line 7, it allocates to the site all the revenue that's attributable to the students there, then allows. Second point is allows the site team to decide who's selected. and to make a staff assignments at the site. And then it includes a completed performance agreement under subdivision 4.
We're in R41 and R42, folks.
Yes, right, Madam Chair. And I think that I better look to see. I assume that's referring to current. Well, I'm sorry, I didn't. Madam Chair, yes, it has to do with the achievement contract and okay. Existing law.
Okay. So, are there any questions about A9? All right. Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting A9, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Schreider. I've been hoping I wouldn't forget this because it's been on my plate now for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And then that brings me to the immunization language.
Have you been in a minute, Jim?
Ms. Larson, do you have?
Oh, they were going to get here.
Do you have language? Are you guys, do you have some language or not? Okay. Oh. Oh, we can do that after we break. We can do it when we come back.
Oh, okay.
Do you want me to write down?
I'm sorry, Senator.
Madam Chair, I think it was kind of, there seemed to be agreement with the concept that I said. Now, I hadn't really written it down. If you want me to do that, I can try to.
Well, that's what, you know, Ms. Larson was going to draft. Did you? Oh, Representative Biskins is working on it. All right.
And then this.
I'm confused. I thought it was you and Senator Kelly. All right, we'll wait. We'll wait again on that. Now, what I thought we would do here is take about a one-hour recess. I think we all know what's available now to be spent, and we can come back, hopefully, with offers that are, you know, indicate that we would like to get done, rather than play games. So that would be my hope, that we could make some progress. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, is there any place that we have just a list of comparison of the items where there's differences in spending?
Was anything
like that ever compiled?
You know, we could bring that back next time, but we didn't get a chance to get that done this morning.
That would be a good basis for kind of showing where.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Yes, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe I can toss out a suggestion. If we take the list that you put out there, the so-called target list, and then and you take and subtract the special education, which is, I believe, $22 million.
It's actually 24, I think, for maintenance of effort.
Is it 24?
Mm-hmm. It's almost 24 million. It's we will be fined if we don't spend that much by the federal government.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you take the 20. Okay, so if you take the and subtract the maintenance of effort from that 80 million. And divide that by 2, what we could do is the House could take and spend that comes to $28 million. You come back with a list of how you'd spend the $28 million. The Senate will come back with a list on how we would spend $28 million. And then you could take and compare those lists. And we could get to a bottom line very quickly, I think, by doing that.
But we also have a number of language issues, you know, that are still outstanding. So I think we're going to probably want to bring back some things on language issues as well. So it isn't just money here. But I guess at some point we can try that, but that would leave us each $28 million to spend.
Correct. And I think, Madam Chair, this is just to put out on the table a starting point where we can get to the bottom line as quickly as possible. And you know, there's going to be some similarities we can identify. And I think the Senate's position is that we'd like to get this as, you know, wrapped up as quickly as possible, too.
Are you suggesting that you'd like to get done today, Senator?
I would like to get done, and I think all of our Senate colleagues would like to get done as quickly as possible. And if that's today, that would be great.
Well, you know, when you look at this, I sort of feel that the House, you know, didn't have this linked. So I kind of feel maybe we should have a little bigger piece of the pie to split up, since we're losing a lot of money putting in the $32 million to link. And, you know, we're willing to add the $32 million to link or whatever this comes to if we link. We had linked everything but compensatory, so it's really not a big deal here. And I think the compensatory comes to 32, but, you know, when we link that, there's a lot of other priorities that we had in our bill. We kind of listed out some of the priorities. We had quite a few more when we started in our bill than the Senate had when you started, because you had everything on the formula.
Madam Chair, that would be a starting point. I mean, just offering a framework to work within.
Okay, we can start with that, but that isn't a done deal, Senator. Senator Kelly.
Well, Madam Chair, if we were going to look at what was in the two different bills, somebody used up $12 million of the House's allocation by committing to get ready, get credit. The House would
that
have.
That was in our bill, Senator.
No, so the House has already gotten $12 million of its extra spending,
Senator,
in the global agreement.
Senator, we only had, I think, $8 million left in it. We had subtracted some of that. Now it's back to the governor's number.
So, Madam Chair.
So we lost $4 million in this game.
But, Madam Chair, having not been a part of that, are there any items on this list that weren't in the House that the Senate got in the global agreement?
Yeah.
So there is.
Well, neither bill had the additional equity in it.
Okay.
And
early childhood was at what level in both bills?
It was $35 million in the Senate, and it was 21 in the House. Something like that.
Okay.
Well,
so,
Madam Chair, I renew that.
And you already
idea.
Got 10 of that. Okay. Let me say one thing, though, guys. Before we go away with this, are we going to put the money aside for the value added and the science test and the carpenter buses?
Right. Well, Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I think the exercise of taking $28 million, regardless of whether that number would grow or shrink, is a fairly decent one, because what it would show us is whether there's some things that we would come back with that would be agreed upon.
Mm-hmm.
And it would just narrow that scope of that discussion. And even in the course of that, I don't think that necessarily rules out some further discussion if there's some things that both sides really do want, or that from one side or the other, that that some modification could be made in the linking. I'm not advocating or promoting it at this point, but I presume that the carpenter buses and the value added might be a part. They're going to have to be a part of that bottom line somewhere, and if both of them include it,
well,
that would
we're
be
stuck with those, right?
Well, you're putting them in here as if we have kind of agreed to them anyway.
I don't think we formally agreed, because the carpenter buses cost money, but I think we know it has to be done.
Okay.
And we know we have to spend the value-added money. That doesn't mean we've agreed on the language.
But it would still come out of the half and half regardless.
Right.
So I think the exercise, I think, could be useful during this break to come back and get us started down that road.
All right. Then can I talk to you for a couple minutes? All right, why don't we declare... Did you pass, by the way, did you have this? Why don't we declare a recess? We'll try to come back in an hour. It's 10 to 4. So let's kind of shoot for a quarter. What?
Do you need an hour?
By the time we walk over to the Capitol, I don't know. It probably
we need to find you a room here. I bet there are rooms available in the house. There aren't a whole lot of people in here today. Would you like a room here? All right, Brett. Let's give them a room so they can caucus right here and don't have to run home. Don't have to run back to the Capitol. I bet you have a conference room, don't you? In the
yes, you could be. You could want to use our conference room.
Why don't you
use the lower level library? That would be a good working.
Okay. Are you set then? Can you get it? Can you access that right now?
I certainly can.
Okay.
You're invited.
All right. So let's. How soon do you think you can be back here? Oh, but you can see your father.
Yeah.
Well, Eric runs. Yeah. That's fast, I think.
Downstairs, right?
Right.
You mean a copy machine?
A copy machine, you mean?
Print printer.
Computer connected.
Madam Chair, this is more internal discussion than we probably needed to be. I mean, the issue for the Senate becomes being able to print to the extent that we're producing offers. So we might have
be able to plug into a printer.
Do you have a computer over here?
I'm not sure how all that works. Who's the technical?
Madam Chair, we can figure that out.
Okay, good. I'm glad you can figure that out.
Just moved on.
I'm glad I don't have to figure that out. Okay, let's say that we would be back here. It's 10 to 4.
Oh my God.
Can you be back at 5:30? That's more than an hour.
Five o'clock.
All right.
Then we could
get
dinner. 5 o'clock. It depends on our progress whether or not we get to eat.
Yes.
Oh, no. Okay. We'll be back at 5. Senator, you didn't want to eat today, did you? All right, we're in recess.